expected that his sons live. He has cut them off mid-air.
That's the way it seems to me, Liza.
If he tells you to mind your own business, what then?
Well, I don't know.
Her jaws snapped shut and her teeth clicked. If you do not get those boys named, there'll be no warm place in this house for you. Don't you dare come whining back, saying he wouldn't do it or he wouldn't listen. If you do, I'll have to go myself.
I'll give him the back of my hand, Samuel said.
No, that you won't do. You fall short in savagery, Samuel. I know you. You'll give him sweet-sounding words, and you'll come dragging back and try to make me forget you ever went.
I'll beat his brains out, Samuel shouted.
He slammed into the bedroom, and Liza smiled at the panels. He came out soon in his black suit and his hard, shiny shirt and collar. He stooped down to her while she tied his black string tie. His white beard was brushed to shining.
You'd best take a swab at your shoes with a blacking brush, she said.
In the midst of painting the blacking on his worn shoes, he looked sideways up at her.
Could I take the Bible along? He asked. There's no place for getting a good name like the Bible.
I don't much like it out of the house, she said uneasily. And if you're late coming home, what'll I have for my reading? And the children's names are in it. She saw his face fall. She went into the bedroom and came back with a small Bible, worn and scuffed, its cover held on by brown paper and glue.
Take this one, she said.
But that's your mother's.
She wouldn't mind.
And all the names but one in here have two dates.
I'll wrap it so it won't get hurt, said Samuel.
Liza spoke sharply. What my mother would mind is what I mind, and I'll tell you what I mind. You're never satisfied to let the testament alone. You're forever picking at it and questioning it. You turn it over the way a coon turns over a wet rock, and it angers me.
I'm just trying to understand it, Mother.
What is there to understand? Just read it. There it is in black and white. Who wants you to understand it? If the Lord God wanted you to understand it, he had given you to understand it. Or he'd have set it down different.
But, Mother...
Samuel, she said, you are the most contentious man this world has ever seen.
Yes, Mother.
Don't agree with me all the time. It hints of insincerity. Speak up for yourself.
She looked after his dark figure in the buggy as he drove away.
He is a sweet husband, she said aloud, but contentious.
And Samuel was thinking with wonder.
Just when I think I know her, she does a thing like that.
On the last half mile, turning out of the Salinas Valley and driving up the unscraped road under the great oak trees, Samuel tried to plait a rage to take care of his embarrassment. He said heroic words to himself. Adam was more gaunt than Samuel remembered. His eyes were dull, as though he didn't use them much for seeing. It took a long time for Adam to become aware that Samuel was standing before him. A grimace of displeasure drew down his mouth. Samuel said,
I feel small now, coming uninvited as I have.
Adam said,
What do you want? Didn't I pay you?
Pay? Samuel asked.
Yes, you did. Yes, by God, you did.
And I'll tell you, that pay has been more than I've merited by the nature of it.
What? What are you trying to say?
Samuel's anger grew and put out leaves.
A man his whole life matches himself against pay. And how, if it's my whole life's work to find my worth, can you, sad man, write me down instant in a ledger?
Adam exclaimed,
I'll pay. I tell you, I'll pay. How much? I'll pay.
You have, but not to me.
Why did you come, then? Go away.
You once invited me.
I don't invite you now.
Samuel put his hands on his hips and leaned forward.
I'll tell you now, quiet.
in a bitter night, a mustard night that was last night, a good thought came, and the dark was sweetened when the day sat down. And this thought went from evening star to the late dipper on the edge of the first light, that our better spoke of. So I invite myself. You aren't welcome, Samuel said. I'm told that out of some singular glory, your loins got twins. What business is that of yours? A kind of joy lighted Samuel's eyes at the rudeness. He saw Lee lurking inside the house and peeking out at him. Don't, for the love of God, put violence on me. I'm a man hopes there'll be a picture of peace on my hatchments. I don't understand you. How could you? Adam Trask, a dog wolf with a pair of cubs. A scrubby rooster with a sweet paternity for a fertilized egg. A dirty clod. A darkness covered Adam's cheeks, and for the first time his eyes seemed to see. Samuel joyously felt hot rage in his stomach. He cried, Oh, my friend, retreat from me, please, I beg of you. The saliva dampened the corners of his mouth. Please, he cried, for the love of any holy thing you can remember, step back from me. I feel murder nudging my gizzard. Adam said, Get off my place. Go on, get off. You're acting crazy. Get off. This is my place. I bought it. You bought your eyes and nose, Samuel jeered. You bought your uprightness. You bought your thumb on sideways. Listen to me, because I'm like to kill you after. You bought. You bought out of some sweet inheritance. Think now, do you deserve your children, man? Deserve them? They're here, I guess. I don't understand you. Samuel wailed. God save me, Liza. It's not the way you think, Adam. Listen to me before my thumb finds the bad place at throat. The precious twins, untried, unnoticed, undirected, and I say it quiet with my hands down, undiscovered. Get off, said Adam hoarsely. Lee, bring a gun. This man is crazy. Lee! Then Samuel's hands were on Adam's throat, pressing the throbbing up to his temples, swelling his eyes with blood. And Samuel was snarling at him, Tear away with your jelly fingers. You have not bought these boys, nor stolen them, nor passed any bit for them. You have them by some strange and lovely dispensation. Suddenly he plucked his hard thumbs out of his neighbor's throat. Adam stood panting. He felt his throat where the blacksmith hands had been. What is it you want of me? You have no love. I had enough to kill me. No one ever had enough. The stone orchard celebrates too little, not too much. Stay away from me. I can fight back. Don't think I can't defend myself. You have two weapons, and they not named. I'll fight you, old man. You are an old man. Samuel said, I can't think in my mind of a dull man picking up a rock who before evening would not put a name to it, like Peter. And you, for a year, you've lived with your hearts draining and you've not even laid a number to the boys. Adam said, What I do is my own business. Samuel struck him with a work-heavy fist, and Adam sprawled out in the dust. Samuel asked him to rise, and when Adam accepted, struck him again, and this time Adam didn't get up. He looked stonily at the menacing old man. The fire went out of Samuel's eyes, and he said quietly, Your sons have no names. Adam replied, Their mother left them motherless, and you have left them fatherless. Can't you feel the cold at night of a lone child? What warm is there? What bird song? What possible morning can be good? Don't you remember, Adam, how it was, even a little?
I didn't do it,
Adam said. Have you undone it? Your boys have no names.
He stooped down and put his arms around Adam's shoulders and helped him to his feet.
We'll give them names, he said. We'll think long and find good names to clothe them.
He whipped the dust from Adam's shirt with his hands.
Adam wore a faraway yet intent look, as though he were listening to some wind-carried music. But his eyes weren't dead as they had been. He said,
It's hard to imagine I'd thank a man for insults and for shaking me out like a rug. But I'm grateful. It's a hurty thanks, but it's thanks.
Samuel smiled, crinkle-eyed.
Did it seem natural? Did I do it right? He asked.
What do you mean?
Well, in a way, I promised my wife I'd do it. She didn't believe I would. I'm not a fighting man, you see. The last time I clobbered a human soul, it was over a red-nosed girl in a school book in County Derry.
Adam stared at Samuel, but in his mind he saw and felt his brother Charles, black and murderous, and that sight switched to Kathy and the quality of her eyes over the gun barrel.
There wasn't any fear in it, Adam said. It was more like a weariness.
I guess I wasn't angry enough.
Samuel, I'll ask just once and then no more. Have you heard anything? Has there been any news of her? Any news at all?
I've heard nothing.
It's almost a relief, said Adam.
Do you have hatred?
No. No, only a kind of sinking in the heart. Maybe later I'll sort it out to hatred. There was no interval from loveliness to horror, you see. I'm confused, confused.
Samuel said, One day we'll sit and you'll lay it out on the table, neat like a solitaire deck. But now, why, you can't find all the cards. From behind the shed there came the indignant shrieking of an outraged chicken, and then a dull thump.
There's something at the hens, said Adam.
A second shrieking started.
It's Lee at the hens, said Samuel. You know, if chickens had government and church and history, they would take a distant and distasteful view of human joy. Let any gay and hopeful thing happen to a man, and some chicken goes howling to the block.
Now the two men were silent, breaking it only with small false courtesies, meaningless inquiries about health and weather, with answers unlistened to. And this might have continued until they were angry at each other again, if Lee hadn't interfered. Lee brought out a table and two chairs and set the chairs facing each other. He made another trip for a pint of whiskey and two glasses and set a glass on the table in front of each chair. Then he carried out the twins, one under each arm, and put them on the ground beside the table and gave each boy a stick for his hand to shake and make shadows with. The boys sat solemnly and looked about, staring at Samuel's beard, and searched for Lee. The strange thing about them was their clothing, for the boys were dressed in the straight trousers and the frogged and braided jackets of the Chinese. One was in turquoise blue, and the other in a faded rose pink, and the frogs and braid were black. On their heads sat round black silken hats, each with a bright red button on its flat top. Samuel asked, Where in the world did you get those clothes, Lee?
I didn't get them, Lee said testily. I had them.
The only other clothes they have, I made myself out of sailcloth. A boy should be well dressed on his naming day.
You've dropped the pigeon, Lee.
I hope for good. Of course, I use it in King City.
He addressed a few short sung syllables to the boys on the ground, and they both smiled up at him and waved their sticks in the air.
Lee said, I'll pour you a drink. It's some that was here.
It's some you bought yesterday in King City, said Samuel. Now that Samuel and Adam were seated together and the barriers were down, a curtain of shyness fell on Samuel. What he had beaten in with his fists, he could not supplement easily. He thought of the virtues of courage and forbearance, which become flabby when there is nothing to use them on. His mind grinned inward at itself. The two sat looking at the twin boys in their strange, bright-colored clothes. Samuel thought, "Sometimes your opponent can help you more than your friend." He lifted his eyes to Adam. "It's hard to start," he said. "And it's like a put-off letter that gathers difficulties to itself out of the minutes. Could you give me a hand?" Adam looked up for a moment and then back at the boys on the ground.
"There's a crashing in my head," he said, "like sounds you hear underwater. I'm having to dig myself out of a year.
Maybe you'll tell me how it was, and that'll get us started." Adam tossed down his drink and poured another, and rolled the glass at an angle in his hand. The amber whiskey moved high on the side, and the pungent fruit odor of its warming filled the air.
"It's hard to remember," he said. "It wasn't agony, but a dullness. But no, there were needles in it. You said I hadn't all the cards on the deck, and I was thinking of that. Maybe I'll never have all the cards."
"Is it herself trying to come out? When a man says he doesn't want to speak of something, he usually means he can think of nothing else."
"Maybe that's it. She's all mixed up with the dullness. And I can't remember much, except the last picture drawn in fire."
"She did shoot you, didn't she, Adam?" His lips grew thin and his eyes black. Samuel said, "There's no need to answer."
"There's no reason not to," Adam replied. "Yes, she did."
"Did she mean to kill you?"
"I've thought of that more than anything else. No, I don't think she meant to kill me. She didn't allow me that dignity. There was no hatred in her, no passion at all. I learned about that in the army. If you want to kill a man, you shoot at head or heart or stomach. No, she hit me where she intended. I can see the gun barrel moving over. I guess I wouldn't have minded so much if she had wanted my death. That would have been a kind of love. But I was an annoyance, not an enemy."
"You've given it a lot of thought," said Samuel.
"I've had lots of time for it. I want to ask you something. I can't remember behind the last ugly thing. Was she very beautiful, Samuel?"
"To you, she was. Because you built her. I don't think you ever saw her. Only your own creation." Adam mused aloud.
"I wonder who she was, what she was. I was content not to know."
"And now you want to?" Adam dropped his eyes.
"It's not curiosity, but I would like to know what kind of blood is in my boys. When they grow up, won't I be looking for something in them?"
"Yes, you will. And I'll warn you now that not their blood, but your suspicion might build evil in them. They will be what you expect of them."
"But their blood."
"I don't very much believe in blood," said Samuel. "I think when a man finds good or bad in his children, he is seeing only what he planted in them after they cleared the womb."
"You can't make a racehorse of a pig."
"No," said Samuel, "but you can make a very fast pig."
"No one hereabouts would agree with you. I think even Mrs. Hamilton wouldn't."
"That's exactly right. She most of all would disagree. And so I would not say it to her and let loose the thunder of her disagreement. She wins all arguments by the use of vehemence and the conviction that a difference of opinion is a personal affront. She's a fine woman, but you have to learn to feel your way with her. Let's speak of the boys.
Will you have another drink?"
"That I will, thank you." Names are a great mystery. I've never known whether the name is molded by the child or the child changed to fit the name. But you can be sure of this. Whenever a human has a nickname, it is a proof that the name given him was wrong. How do you favor the standard names? John or James or Charles? Adam was looking at the twins, and suddenly, with the mention of the name, he saw his brother peering out of the eyes of one of the boys. He leaned forward. "What is it?" Samuel asked. "Why," Adam cried, "these boys are not alike. They don't look alike." "Of course they don't. They're not identical twins."
That one looks like my brother. I just saw it. I wonder if the other looks like me."
"Both of them do. A face has everything in it right back to the beginning."
"It's not so much now," said Adam. "But for a moment I thought I was seeing a ghost."
"Maybe that's what ghosts are," Samuel observed. Lee brought dishes out and put them on the table. "Do you have Chinese ghosts?" Samuel asked.
"Millions," said Lee. "We have more ghosts than anything else. I guess nothing in China ever dies. It's very crowded. Anyway, that's the feeling I got when I was there."
Samuel said, "Sit down, Lee. We're trying to think of names."
"I've got chicken frying. It'll be ready pretty soon."
Adam looked up from the twins, and his eyes were warmed and softened.
"Will you have a drink, Lee?"
"I'm nipping at the ngapi in the kitchen," said Lee, and went back to the house.
Samuel leaned down and gathered up one of the boys and held him on his lap. "Take that one up," he said to Adam. "We got to see whether there's something that draws names to them." Adam held the other child awkwardly on his knee.
"They look some alike," he said, "but not when you look close. This one has rounder eyes than that one."
"Yes, and a rounder head and bigger ears," Samuel added. "But this one is more like a bullet. This one might go farther, but not so high. And this one is going to be darker in the hair and skin. This one will be shrewd, I think. And shrewdness is a limitation on the mind. Shrewdness tells you what you must not do because it would not be shrewd. See how this one supports himself? He's farther along than that one, better developed. Isn't it strange how different they are when you look close?" Adam's face was changing, as though he had opened and come out on his surface. He held up his finger, and the child made a lunge for it and missed and nearly fell off his lap.
"Whoa," said Adam. "Take it easy. Do you want to fall?"
"It would be a mistake to name them for qualities we think they have," Samuel said. "We might be wrong, so wrong. Maybe it'd be good to give them a high mark to shoot at, a name to live up to. The man I'm named for had his name called clear by the Lord God, and I've been listening all my life. And once or twice I've thought I heard my name called, but not clear, not clear." Adam, holding the child by his upper arm, leaned over and poured whiskey in both glasses.
"I thank you for coming, Samuel," he said. "I even thank you for hitting me. It's a strange thing to say."
"It was a strange thing for me to do. Liza will never believe it, and so I'll never tell her. An unbelieved truth can hurt a man much more than a lie. It takes great courage to back truth unacceptable to our times. There's a punishment for it, and it's usually crucifixion. I haven't the courage for that." Adam said, "I've wondered why a man of your knowledge would work a desert hill place." "It's because I haven't courage," said Samuel. "I could never quite take the responsibility. When the Lord God did not call my name, I might have called his name, but I didn't. There you have the difference between greatness and mediocrity. It's not an uncommon disease, but it's nice for a mediocre man to know that greatness must be the loneliest state in the world."
"I think there are degrees of greatness," Adam said.
"I don't think so," said Samuel. "That would be like saying there's a little bigness." "No, I believe when you come to that responsibility, the hugeness and you are alone to make your choice. On the one side, you have warmth and companionship and sweet understanding, and on the other, cold, lonely greatness. There you make your choice. I'm glad I chose mediocrity, but how am I to say what reward might have come with the other? None of my children would be great either, except perhaps Tom. He's suffering over the choosing right now. It's a painful thing to watch. And somewhere in me, I want him to say yes. Isn't that strange? A father to want his son condemned to greatness. What selfishness that must be. Adam chuckled. This naming is no simple business, I see. Did you think it would be? I didn't know it could be so pleasant, said Adam. Lee came out with a platter of fried chicken, a bowl of smoking boiled potatoes, and a deep dish of pickled beets, all carried on a pastry board. I don't know how good it will be, he said. The hens are a little old. We don't have any pullets. The weasels got the baby chicks this year.
Pull up, said Samuel.
Wait until I get my ingapi, said Lee.
While he was gone, Adam said, It's strange to me. He used to speak differently.
He trusts you now, Samuel said. He has a gift of resigned loyalty without hope of reward. He's maybe a much better man than either of us could dream of being.
Lee came back and took his seat at the end of the table. Just put the boys on the ground, he said. The twins protested when they were set down. Lee spoke to them sharply in Cantonese, and they were silent. The men ate quietly, as nearly all country people do. Suddenly, Lee got up and hurried into the house. He came back with a jug of red wine.
I forgot it, he said. I found it in the house.
Adam laughed.
I remember drinking wine here before I bought the place. Maybe I bought the place because of the wine. The chicken's good, Lee. I don't think I've been aware of the taste of food for a long time.
You're getting well, Samuel said.
Some people think it's an insult to the glory of their sickness to get well. But the time poultice is no respecter of glories. Everyone gets well if he waits around.
Lee cleared the table and gave each of the boys a clean drumstick. They sat solemnly, holding their greasy batons and alternately inspecting and sucking them. The wine and the glasses stayed on the table.
We'd best get on with the naming, Samuel said. I can feel a little tightening on my halter from Liza.
I can't think what to name them, Adam said.
You have no family name you want? No inviting trap for a rich relative? No proud name to recreate?
No. I'd like him to start fresh, insofar as that's possible.
Samuel knocked his forehead with his knuckles.
What a shame, he said. What a shame it is that the proper names for them they cannot have.
What do you mean? Adam asked.
Freshness, you said. I thought last night... He paused. Have you thought of your own name?
Mine?
Of course. Your firstborn, Cain and Abel.
Adam said,
Oh, no. No, we can't do that.
I know we can't. That would be tempting whatever fate there is. But isn't it odd that Cain is maybe the best-known name in the whole world, and as far as I know, only one man has ever borne it?
Lee said, Maybe that's why the name has never changed its emphasis. Adam looked into the ink-red wine in his glass.
I got a shiver when you mentioned it, he said.
Two stories have haunted us and followed us from our beginning, Samuel said. We carry them along with us like invisible tales. The story of original sin and the story of Cain and Abel. And I don't understand either of them. I don't understand them at all, but I feel them. Liza gets angry with me. She says I shouldn't try to understand them. She says, why should we try to explain a verity? Maybe she's right. Maybe she's right. Lee, Liza says you're a Presbyterian. Do you understand the Garden of Eden and Cain and Abel?
She thought I should be something, and I went to Sunday school long ago in San Francisco. People like you to be something, preferably what they are.
Adam said,
he asked you if you understood. I think I understand the fall. I could perhaps feel that in myself. But the brother murder, no. Well, maybe I don't remember the details very well.
Samuel said, most people don't read the details. It's the details that astonish me. And Abel had no children. He looked up at the sky. Lord, how the day passes. It's like a life, so quickly when we don't watch it, and so slowly when we do. No, he said, I'm having enjoyment. And I made a promise to myself that I would not consider enjoyment a sin. I take pleasure in inquiring into things. I've never been content to pass a stone without looking under it. And it's a black disappointment to me that I can never see the far side of the moon.
I don't have a Bible, Adam said. I left the family one in Connecticut.
I have, said Lee. I'll get it.
No need, said Samuel. Liza let me take her mother's. It's here in my pocket.
He took out the package and unwrapped the battered book.
This one has been scraped and gnawed at, he said. I wonder what agonies have settled here. Give me a used Bible and I will, I think, be able to tell you about a man by the places that are edged with the dirt of seeking fingers. Liza wears a Bible down evenly. Here we are, this oldest story. If it troubles us, it must be that we find the trouble in ourselves.
I haven't heard it since I was a child, said Adam.
You think it's long, then, and it's very short, said Samuel. I'll read it through, and then we'll go back. Give me a little wine. My throat's dried out with wine. Here it is. Such a little story to have made so deep a wound.
He looked down at the ground.
See, he said, the boys have gone to their sleep, there in the dust.
Lee got up.
I'll cover them, he said.
The dust is warm, said Samuel. Now, it goes this way. And Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord.
Adam started to speak, and Samuel looked up at him, and he was silent and covered his eyes with his hand.
Samuel read, And she again bare his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel he also brought of the firstlings of his flock, and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect.
Lee said, Now there. No, go on. We'll come back.
Samuel read, And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth? And why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. And unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him.
And Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. And the Lord said unto Cain, Where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. And now art thou cursed from the earth, which hath opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee her strength. A fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be in the earth. And Cain said unto the Lord, My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid. And I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it shall come to pass that everyone that findeth me shall slay me. And the Lord said unto him, Therefore whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. And Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. Samuel closed the loose cover of the book almost with weariness. "There it is," he said. 16 verses, no more. And, O Lord, I had forgotten how dreadful it is. No single tone of encouragement. Maybe Liza's right. There's nothing to understand. Adam sighed deeply. It's not a comforting story, is it?
This ends Disc 10. East of Eden, Disc 11.
Lee poured a tumbler full of dark liquor from his round stone bottle and sipped it, and opened his mouth to get the double taste on the back of his tongue. No story has power, nor will it last unless we feel in ourselves that it is true, and true of us. What a great burden of guilt men have. Samuel said to Adam, "And you have tried to take it all." Lee said, "So do I. So does everyone. We gather our arms full of guilt, as though it were precious stuff. It must be that we want it that way." Adam broke in. "It makes me feel better, not worse." "How do you mean?" Samuel asked. "Well, every little boy thinks he invented sin. Virtue we think we learn because we're told about it, but sin is our own designing." "Yes, I see. But how does this story make it better?" "Because," Adam said excitedly, "we're descended from this. This is our father. Some of our guilt is absorbed in our ancestry. What chance did we have? We are children of our father. It means we aren't the first. It's an excuse, and there aren't enough excuses in the world." "Not convincing ones, anyway," said Lee. "Else we would long ago have wiped out guilt, and the world wouldn't be filled with sad, punished people." Samuel said, "But do you think of another frame to this picture? Excuse or not, we are snapped back to our ancestry. We have guilt." Adam said, "I remember being a little outraged at God. Both Cain and Abel gave what they had, and God accepted Abel and rejected Cain. I never thought that was a just thing. I never understood it. Do you?" "Maybe we think out of a different background," said Lee. "I remember that this story was written by and for a shepherd people. They weren't farmers. Wouldn't the God of shepherds find a fat lamb more valuable than a sheaf of barley? A sacrifice must be the best and most valuable."
"Yes, I can see that," said Samuel. "And Lee, let me caution you about bringing your Oriental reasoning to Liza's attention."
Adam was excited.
"Yes, but why did God condemn Cain? That's an injustice."
Samuel said,
"There's an advantage to listening to the words. God didn't condemn Cain at all. Even God can have a preference, can't he? Let's suppose God liked lamb better than vegetables. I think I do myself. Cain brought him a bunch of carrots, maybe. And God said, 'I don't like this. Try again. Bring me something I like, and I'll set you up alongside your brother.' But Cain got mad. His feelings were hurt. And when a man's feelings are hurt, he wants to strike at something. And Abel was in the way of his anger."
Lee said, "St. Paul says to the Hebrews that Abel had faith."
"There's no reference to it in Genesis," Samuel said. "No faith or lack of faith. Only a hint of Cain's temper."
Lee asked, "How does Mrs. Hamilton feel about the paradoxes of the Bible?"
"Why, she doesn't feel anything, because she doesn't admit they're there."
"But..."
"Hush, man, ask her, and you'll come out of it older, but not less confused."
Adam said, "You two have studied this. I only got it through my skin, and not much of it stuck. Then Cain was driven out for murder."
"That's right, for murder."
"And God branded him?"
"Did you listen? Cain bore the mark not to destroy him, but to save him. And there's a curse called down on any man who shall kill him. It was a preserving mark."
Adam said,
I can't get over the feeling that Cain got the dirty end of the stick.
Maybe he did, said Samuel. But Cain lived and had children, and Abel lives only in the story. We are Cain's children. And isn't it strange that three grown men, here in a century so many thousands of years away, discussed this crime as though it happened in King City yesterday and hadn't come up for trial?
One of the twins awakened and yawned and looked at Lee and went to sleep again.
Lee said, Remember, Mr. Hamilton, I told you I was trying to translate some old Chinese poetry into English? No, don't worry. I won't read it. Doing it, I found some of the old things as fresh and clear as this morning, and I wondered why. And of course, people are interested only in themselves. If a story is not about the hearer, he won't listen. And I here make a rule. A great and lasting story is about everyone, or it will not last. The strange and foreign isn't interesting, only the deeply personal and familiar.
Samuel said, Apply that to the Cain and Abel story.
And Adam said, I didn't kill my brother.
Suddenly he stopped and his mind went reeling back in time.
I think I can, Lee answered Samuel. I think this is the best known story in the world because it's everybody's story. I think it is the symbol story of the human soul. I'm feeling my way now. Don't jump on me if I'm not clear. The greatest terror a child can have is that he is not loved, and rejection is the hell he fears. I think everyone in the world, to a large or small extent, has felt rejection, and with rejection comes anger, and with anger, some kind of crime in revenge for the rejection, and with the crime, guilt. And there is the story of mankind. I think that if rejection could be amputated, the human would not be what he is. Maybe there would be fewer crazy people. I'm sure in myself there would not be many jails. It's all there, the start, the beginning. One child refused the love he craves, kicks the cat, and hides his secret guilt. And another steals so that money will make him loved. And a third conquers the world, and always the guilt and revenge and more guilt. The human is the only guilty animal. Now, wait. Therefore, I think this old and terrible story is important because it is a chart of the soul, the secret, rejected, guilty soul. Mr. Trask, you said you didn't kill your brother, and then you remembered something. I don't want to know what it was, but was it very far apart from Cain and Abel?
And what do you think of my Oriental patter, Mr. Hamilton? You know I am no more Oriental than you are.
Samuel had leaned his elbows on the table, and his hands covered his eyes and his forehead.
I want to think, he said. Damn you, I want to think. I want to take this off alone where I can pick it apart and see. Maybe you've tumbled a world for me. And I don't know what I can build in my world's place.
Lee said softly, Couldn't a world be built around accepted truth? Couldn't some pains and insanities be rooted out if the causes were known?
I don't know, damn you. You've disturbed my pretty universe. You've taken a contentious game and made an answer of it. Let me alone. Let me think. Your damned bitch is having pups in my brain already. Oh, I wonder what my Tom will think of this. He'll cradle it in the palm of his mind. He'll turn it slowly in his brain like a roast of pork before the fire. Adam, come out now. You've been long enough in whatever memory it was.
Adam started. He sighed deeply.
Isn't it too simple? He asked. I'm always afraid of simple things.
It isn't simple at all, said Lee. It's desperately complicated. But at the end, there's light.
There's not going to be light long, Samuel said. We've sat and let the evening come. I drove over to help name the twins, and they're not named. We've swung ourselves on a pole. Lee, you better keep your complications out of the machinery of the set-up churches, or there might be a Chinese with nails in his hands and feet. They like complications, but they like their own. I'll have to be driving home. Adam said desperately.
Name me some names.
From the Bible?
From any place.
Well, let's see. Of all the people who started out of Egypt, only two came to the Promised Land. Would you like them for a symbol?
Who?
Caleb and Joshua.
Joshua was a soldier, a general. I don't like soldiering.
Well, Caleb was a captain,
but not a general. I kind of like Caleb. Caleb Trask.
One of the twins woke up and without interval began to wail. You called his name, said Samuel. You don't like Joshua, and Caleb's named. He's the smart one, the dark one. See, the other one is awake, too. Well, Aaron I've always liked, but he didn't make it to the Promised Land. The second boy almost joyfully began to cry.
That's good enough, said Adam.
Suddenly Samuel laughed. In 2 minutes, he said, and after a waterfall of words, Caleb and Aaron, now you are people, and you have joined the fraternity, and you have the right to be damned. Lee took the boys up under his arms.
Have you got them straight?
He asked.
Of course, said Adam. That one is Caleb, and you are Aaron.
Lee lugged the yelling twins toward the house in the dusk.
Yesterday I couldn't tell them apart, said Adam. Aaron and Caleb.
Thank the good Lord we have produce from our patient thought, Samuel said. Liza would have preferred Joshua. She loves the crashing walls of Jericho. But she likes Aaron, too, so I guess it's all right. I'll go and hitch up my rig. Adam walked to the shed with him.
I'm glad you came, he said. There's a weight off me.
Samuel slipped the bit in Doxology's reluctant mouth, set the brow band, and buckled the throat latch. Maybe you'll now be thinking of the garden and the flatland, he said. I can see it there, the way you planned it. Adam was long in answering. At last, he said,
I think that kind of energy has gone out of me. I can't feel the pull of it. I have money enough to live. I never wanted it for myself. I have no one to show a garden to.
Samuel wheeled on him, and his eyes were filled with tears.
Don't think it will ever die, he cried. Don't expect it. Are you better than other men? I tell you, it won't ever die until you do.
He stood panting for a moment, and then he climbed into the rig and whipped Doxology, and he drove away, his shoulders hunched, without saying goodbye.
Part 3. Chapter 23. The Hamiltons were strange, high-strung people, and some of them were tuned too high, and they snapped. This happens often in the world. Of all his daughters, Una was Samuel's greatest joy. Even as a little girl, she hungered for learning, as a child does for cookies in the late afternoon. Una and her father had a conspiracy about learning. Secret books were borrowed and read, and their secrets communicated privately. Of all the children, Una had the least humor. She met and married an intense, dark man, a man whose fingers were stained with chemicals, mostly silver nitrate. He was one of those men who lived in poverty so that their lines of questioning may continue. His question was about photography. He believed that the exterior world could be transferred to paper, not in the ghost shadings of black and white, but in the colors the human eye perceives. His name was Anderson, and he had little gift for communication. Like most technicians, he had a terror and a contempt for speculation. The inductive leap was not for him. He dug a step and pulled himself up one single step, the way a man climbs the last shoulder of a mountain. He had great contempt, born of fear, for the Hamiltons, for they all half-believed they had wings, and they had got some bad falls that way. Anderson never fell, never slipped back, never flew. His steps moved slowly, slowly upward. And in the end, it is said, he found what he wanted, color film. He married Una perhaps because she had little humor, and this reassured him. And because her family frightened and embarrassed him, he took her away to the north. And it was black and lost where he went, somewhere on the borders of Oregon. He must have lived a very primitive life with his bottles and papers. Una wrote bleak letters without joy, but also without self-pity. She was well, and she hoped her family was well. Her husband was near to his discovery. And then she died, and her body was shipped home. I never knew Una. She was dead before I remember. But George Hamilton told me about it many years later, and his eyes filled with tears, and his voice croaked in the telling. Una wasn't a beautiful girl like Molly, he said. She had the loveliest hands and feet. Her ankles were as slender as grass, and she moved like grass. Her fingers were long, and the nails narrow and shaped like almonds. And Una had lovely skin, too, translucent, even glowing. She didn't laugh and play like the rest of us. There was something set apart about her. She seemed always to be listening. When she was reading, her face would be like the face of one listening to music. And when we asked her any question, why, she gave the answer, if she knew it, not pointed up and full of color and maybes and it might be's the way the rest of us would. We were always full of bull. There was some pure, simple thing in Una, George said. And then he brought her home. Her nails were broken to the quick, and her fingers cracked and all worn out. And her poor, dear feet. George couldn't go on for a while. And then he said, with the fierceness of a man trying to control himself, her feet were broken, and gravel cut and briar cut. Her dear feet had not worn shoes for a long time, and her skin was rough as rawhide. We think it was an accident, he said. So many chemicals around. We think it was. But Samuel thought, and mourned in the thought, that the accident was pain and despair. Una's death struck Samuel like a silent earthquake. He said no brave and reassuring words. He simply sat alone and rocked himself. He felt that it was his neglect had done it. And now his tissue, which had fought joyously against time, gave up a little. His young skin turned old, his clear eyes dulled, and a little stoop came to his great shoulders. Liza, with her acceptance, could take care of tragedy. She had no real hope this side of heaven. But Samuel had put up a laughing wall against natural laws, and Una's death breached his battlements. He became an old man. His other children were doing well. George was in the insurance business. Will was getting rich. Joe had gone east and was helping to invent a new profession called advertising. Joe's very faults were virtues in this field. He found that he could communicate his material daydreaming, and properly applied, that is all advertising is. Joe was a big man in a new field. The girls were married, all except Desi, and she had a successful dressmaking business in Salinas. Only Tom had never got started. Samuel told Adam Trask that Tom was arguing with greatness, and the father watched his son and could feel the drive and the fear, the advance and the retreat, because he could feel it in himself. Tom didn't have his father's lyric softness or his gay good looks, but you could feel Tom when you came near to him. You could feel strength and warmth and an iron integrity. And under all of this was a shrinking, a shy shrinking. He could be as gay as his father, and suddenly in the middle it would be cut, the way you would cut a violin string, and you could watch Tom go whirling into darkness. He was a dark-faced man. His skin, perhaps from sun, was a black-red, as though some Norse or perhaps Vandal blood was perpetuated in him. His hair and beard and mustache were dark-red, too, and his eyes gleamed startlingly blue against his coloring. He was powerful, heavy of shoulders and arm, but his hips were slim. He could lift and run and hike and ride with anyone. But he had no sense of competition, whatever. Will and George were gamblers, and often tried to entice their brothers into the joys and sorrows of venture. Tom said, "I've tried, and it just seems tiresome. I've thought why this must be. I get no great triumph when I win, and no tragedy when I lose. Without these, it's meaningless. It's not a way to make money, that we know. And unless it can simulate birth and death, joy and sorrow, it seems, at least to me, it doesn't feel at all. I would do it if I felt anything, good or bad." Will didn't understand this. His whole life was competitive, and he lived by one kind of gambling or another. He loved Tom, and he tried to give him the things he himself found pleasant. He took him into business and tried to inoculate him with the joys of buying and selling, of outwitting other men, of judging them for a bluff, of living by maneuver. Always Tom came back to the ranch, puzzled, not critical, but feeling that somewhere he had lost track. He felt that he should take joy in the man pleasures of contest, but he couldn't pretend to himself that he did. Samuel had said that Tom always took too much on his plate, whether it was beans or women. And Samuel was wise, but I think he knew only one side of Tom. Maybe Tom opened up a little more for children. What I set down about him will be the result of memory, plus what I know to be true, plus conjecture built on the combination. Who knows whether it'll be correct? We lived in Salinas, and we knew when Tom had arrived. I think he always arrived at night, because under our pillows, Mary's and mine, there would be packages of gum. And gum was valuable in those days, just as a nickel was valuable. There were months when he didn't come, but every morning, as soon as we awakened, we put our hands under our pillows to see. And I still do it. And it's been many years since there's been gum there. My sister Mary didn't want to be a girl. It was a misfortune she couldn't get used to. She was an athlete, a marble player, a pitcher of Wunnicat, and the trappings of a girl inhibited her. Of course, this was long before the compensations for being a girl were apparent to her. Just as we knew that somewhere on our bodies, probably under the arm, there was a button which, if pressed just right, would permit us to fly, so Mary had worked out a magic for herself to change her over into the tough little boy she wanted to be. If she went to sleep in a magical position, knees crooked just right, head at a magical angle, all fingers crossed one over the other, in the morning she would be a boy. Every night she tried to find exactly the right combination, but she never could. I used to help her cross her fingers like shiplap. She was despairing of ever getting it right, when one morning there was gum under the pillow. We each peeled a stick and solemnly chewed it. It was Beeman's peppermint, and nothing so delicious has been made since. Mary was pulling on her long black ribbed stockings when she said with great relief, "Of course." "Of course what?" I asked. "Uncle Tom," she said, and chewed her gum with great snapping sounds. "Uncle Tom what?" I demanded. "He'll know how to get to be a boy." There it was, just as simple as that. I wondered why I hadn't thought of it myself. Mother was in the kitchen, overseeing a new little Danish girl who worked for us. We had a series of girls. New-come Danish farm families put their daughters out to service with American families, and they learned not only English, but American cooking and table setting and manners and all the little niceties of high life in Salinas. At the end of a couple of years of this, at $12 a month, the girls were highly desirable wives for American boys. Not only did they have American manners, but they could still work like horses on the fields. Some of the most elegant families in Salinas today are descended from these girls. It would be flaxen-haired Matilda in the kitchen, with Mother clucking over her like a hen. We charged in. "Is he up?" "Shh," said Mother. "He got in late. You let him sleep." But the water was running in the basin of the back bedroom, so we knew he was up. We crouched like cats at his door, waiting for him to emerge. There was always a little diffidence between us at first. I think Uncle Tom was as shy as we were. I think he wanted to come running out and toss us in the air, but instead we were all formal. "Thank you for the gum, Uncle Tom. I'm glad you liked it."
Do you think we'll have an oyster loaf late at night while you're here?